Welcome to the Illuminating Primary Care Podcast, a general practice podcast brought to you by Menlo Park Recruitment. Illuminating Primary Care is here to quiz primary care leaders to offer professional knowledge, experience, and insight on the biggest topics in general practice. It's the podcast to listen to if you work in primary care. Welcome to the Illuminating Primary Care Podcast.
Hello again, everyone. I'm joined again by Dr. Martina Lahi for part two of our three-part series. In this particular part, Dr. Lahi is going to go through his practice and tell us all about, I guess, the challenges that they've faced and how they've overcome those challenges and what their plans are to not just keep surviving in general practice, but to keep thriving as well. Martina, thank you for joining me again. Tell me a bit about your practice then, please.
So first of all, thank you, Matthew, for taking the time out and introducing me. It's a pleasure to be here, pleasure to be talking to you. On to the first question. So a little bit about the practice. We are a primarily GP-based practice with reduced ARS staff. We have 11,500 patient list size, growing quite rapidly. We have five full-time equivalent partners, three salary doctors, couple of nurse practitioners. Regarding demographics and the patient populations, we have a varied demographic with multiple ethnicities, but one of the important and different things about our practice is that we have the third or the fourth highest interpreter appointments in the whole of the ICB, which, as you know, can be actually quite tricky in a way that you have to give double appointments. So if you have one of the highest appointments, interpreter appointments, that means the number of appointments you have to give is quite a lot as well, but we're still managing to provide same day service quite efficiently.
Yeah, no, that's impressive. And we'll come on to that then in a bit more detail. But kind of coming back to when you joined the practice, I remember you and I speaking around the time you were looking to secure a partnership, many years ago. How did you come on to contact with your now practice, and what convinced you to join them?
Yeah, so I joined a pretty large practice when I became a GP, straight into partnership, did 10 sessions. And I think after a couple of years, you start to have your own ideas. And I think there was some sort of resistance to change or innovation, essentially. So I wanted to not just work, I wanted to implement some of my ideas. I wanted to see if I could make the access or patient care a little bit better. So I decided after 3 years in a practice that I wanted to go somewhere else. This was quite a small practice at that time, but growing quite rapidly with a good reputation, not necessarily on Google, but word of mouth. And that's probably, in my opinion, more important, really. And so as I decided, I knew the partners really, really well, and I decided to kind of come here and see if I could implement some of the culture, some of the changes, some of the innovations, which I have managed to do. I think we had the same ethos, essentially, that's why.
Okay, so you had your ideas, and that's obviously what led you to maybe join something a little bit smaller. When you joined the practice then, what did you identify were the areas that needed addressing? You know, what opportunities did you see where you could start to implement your ideas straight away?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think the practice was doing quite well already. It's a small practice, but I see myself, I see myself as a consultant in primary care, but I think I also specialize in growth consultancy as well. And my practice was growing, but I think since I've come, it's grown at an exponential rate as well. So I think we wanted to keep doing the things we were, but further increase the rate of growth. And sometimes, as you know, if you're growing a business rapidly, it's very difficult to make sure the quality of service, quality of patient care stays the same. So what I wanted to do is to put systems in place, change the culture of the practice in a way that we could maintain the level of service to the patients and patient care while growing rapidly. And I think we've managed to do that. And the other thing I wanted to develop was collaborations with local federations and healthcare services, which we are on the way of doing.
So when you assessed what you felt you could contribute, what was it about growth and growing the practice that made you prioritize that over any other initiatives that you might have thought that you could also pursue?
Yeah, so I think the biggest pain point in primary care at the moment is access to care. And we were providing within 24-hour access of care. So we were kind of ticking that box really at that stage. So we thought to ourselves, all the partners, that how can we provide the service but to a bigger population to have a bigger impact, really? And that's why growth was probably the primary goal, while maintaining the type of service, because growth cannot happen. So your practice is not going to grow. People are not going to come to you, specifically word of mouth. We didn't advertise at all, and we have never advertised really, if you don't provide a good service. So that's why we looked into that, to basically provide care for a larger population.
Okay, no, interesting. And you said there was resistance to change in your former practice. Mm-hmm. Did you have any resistance to the changes that you were trying to implement, this growth that you were trying to pursue in your now practice?
I think the biggest resistance that we had was the culture of the practice, but it wasn't too difficult, if I'm being honest with you. The culture was similar to what I had envisaged. I gained an insight into how the practice was working, what needed to change. Not much, but some aspect needed to change. Then, you know, you identify the barriers to change. Are there specifically people? Are there systems in place that are barriers that need to change? And then you slowly start to get people on your side, make sure that everyone's pulling in the right direction, the same mission and the vision of the practice, starting with the senior management team, which, and all of this takes time. But that was the process that I went through. And lastly, obviously, while you're doing that, you put systems in place to make sure that the culture and the way of working stays the same while you're growing, while more people are joining the practice, so it doesn't change in any way.
Okay. So if the goal was a combination of growth but retention of the culture and all the things that made the practice successful in the first place, what has changed in the years and, you know, the months and years since those implementations of, you know, of new strategy? Because as much as you, it sounds like you've been able to retain a lot of the good stuff, surely there have been changes along the way as well. So what changes have there been?
I think the biggest change we have been able to do is actually showcase what we're doing. Previously, we were doing really well, but we weren't really showcasing it. So a prime example would be, we are now probably the highest, if one of the highest for sure, but we might be the highest Google rated practice in the whole of UK. Our national NHS survey results literally speak for themselves. And often, you know, people can be slightly skeptical about Google reviews. Who did the Google reviews for you? Did you ask them to do it, etc.? But NHS patient survey results, you can't do that. So NHS census results. So our NHS survey results are even better than the Google reviews in some aspects. So I think we're really, really proud of that. So I think we're trying to showcase what we're doing. And I think that's probably, the biggest change. And I think there was a recent NHS survey as well, which we got the results of yesterday. And yeah, I mean, so I think they speak for themselves, really.
Okay. And what's impressive is your access was already good. So you were getting good feedback and I guess good loyalty from your patients for your access. Why else then do you think you're, particularly on Google, those ratings have significantly improved? You know, when access is the biggest bugbear, as you say, and you're already giving them that, why do you think those engagement levels with your patients have gone so much higher? You know, you talk about showcasing it. How have you showcased it?
I think we've a lot of people talk to me and say, well, what's the magic sauce? You're saying you're doing all of this. Is it firstly true? And if you are, so why are you so different? And I think our magic sauce, how I say it, is number one, the culture of the practice and engaging patients with the practice, be it with the patient participation group, or be it that we cater for all the patients in any way they wish, rather than what we would like to cater. I'll give you an example. So you have, I've been posting recently on LinkedIn about triage models and innovation, etc. And they're really, really good, by the way. I mean, some of them are really good and they will help practices out there. But what we try and do is listen to our patients. How do they want to access us? And we leave everything open. So online booking 24/7, during the weekends, people can call in, people can use e-consults. Not that many people do because our access is so good. And electronic booking, electronic cancellation. So we leave everything open. We don't, you know, we don't block things for patients. So I think when you leave, as a patient, as a service user, if you have open selection, it's always better than having restricted selection. And I think the other thing I would say is the culture. We have no excuse culture in this practice, especially starting with the partners. So if we have a mission that we want to provide the same day service, no matter what time it is, we will provide same day service. It's not going to be like, oh, we're busy today, we're not going to do it, or we'll block the appointments today because we're so busy. So I think that really helps. And we don't really have a fixed list for partners. So as I said, if we are really busy that day, you just suck it up and kind of work the extra mile that day, really. And that culture and ethos, if it starts from the top, you will realize very soon that the whole practice will join in with that as well. And then you have the results in front of you.
So there'll be practice managers and partners watching this, either terrified at the prospect of, you know, giving carte blanche to patients and saying, you tell us how you want us to manage it, and others thinking, you know, how is this sustainable? So how have you managed to make it sustainable for yourself and your fellow partners, so that, you know, you're still able to work at the same level of efficiency and still be as optimized as you are and not just be, you know, bent to a crisp, as we hear so often in the media currently about GPs?
Yeah, a very good question. So when I came in, I remember sitting on the first week, and because essentially all of the partners are on call, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't have fixed lists. So we were some days doing 50 patient contacts every day. So essentially all of us were on call doing 50 patient contacts every day. And I thought exactly the same thing. This is not sustainable, especially if we're going to grow at a rapid rate. Because if we provide the service, a lot of people are going to come. We don't want to refuse people coming. So it's just going to grow, and it's not going to become sustainable. So then I sat down with the practice manager. We did a lot of thinking as partners and management team. We did a lot of data collecting, data analyzing, and that I can talk a lot about that as well, to be honest. But and then we worked out projected, essentially. We project 6 months ahead because we couldn't project 5 years ahead because the rate of growth was so quick. So we projected 3 months and 6 months ahead, and we did regular meetings to see if our projections were correct. And based on that, we employed people very, very quickly. And that it's not just clinicians, but we prioritize reception staff, number one, because we truly believe in our practice. The reception team is the core of our business or our patient care. And if we can get that right, and the patients are satisfied from walking into the door as well. And yeah, so those are some of the headings of what we did, which have really, really helped us.
No, amazing. So looking at your scores, your satisfaction rates again then, obviously on the back end, they were really good before. Now on the front end and in visible areas such as Google, they're really good as well. How does that compare to your PCN colleagues, you know, other practices in the area, you know, because others might say, oh, well, it might just be a particularly engaged area. Are you an isolated example in your region?
So in our PCN, I think we probably the highest rated. I think we are the highest rated, but there are a couple of practices who are near us, but then there's a couple of other practices who are, you know, maybe average, maybe slightly below average of NHS England. So I don't think it's our population. In fact, I've given you a reason why actually the demand on us, just because of asylum seekers, different ethnicity groups, interpretive problems, demand on us is in fact slightly more than the whole in the whole of the ICS. So maybe we're fortunate, but I think there's a lot of hard work that we do as well that helps us as well. But yes, I think the biggest thing we have done is we have gained patient satisfaction and gained on Google reviews, etc., while growing. And that's extremely difficult to do because when you're growing, lots of people are coming into the organization, be it admin or clinical, and you have to incorporate them into the business while making sure the service is. That can be tricky, and that was challenging, but we have accomplished it.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I just want to go back to a point you mentioned before, actually. So at the beginning, you describe yourselves as a GP heavy practice or a GP top heavy practice. I can't remember the exact way you described it, but you said with a reduced hours team. Now it's all over the news at the minute, all over the media, how the hours roles are becoming more and more and ever present, and in some quarters, worries or claims that they are in some areas replacing GPs. Do you think some of your success can be attributed to being so GP top heavy and still having a GP led model? Would that be fair to say?
100%. So I think there's, I always talk about this. I think there is a role for allied healthcare staff. 100%. There's a role for physician associates, nurse practitioners, nurse associates, etc. However, we believe, and I might be wrong, but it seems to be working for us, is that the GPs have to lead a practice clinically as well, not just admin-wise and supervising people, but clinically as well, with the allied healthcare staff assisting us. That is not to say that they're not as good as us or they're not as important as they are, but I think what we sometimes forget and what I've seen is that allied healthcare staff have not been provided enough supervision, and it's not safe. Thank God, tapping the table, we don't hardly get any complaints. And I think that plays a huge part because, for example, I'll tell you, so we have an advanced nurse practitioner, and every single one of his patients is debriefed, just like the registrar would. And that's a lot of work for partners. I totally understand that, but we want patient care to be as near 100% as possible. So I think with clear supervision, allied healthcare staff are magic. They're amazing, but you have to provide that supervision. But we believe in a GP-led model with allied healthcare staff assisting.
Okay, really, really good to know. Does that set you apart at all from the other practices in your area? Obviously, you mentioned some of them. It sounds like they're doing well as well and engaging with their patients too. Are you unique in that sense? What sets you apart from your neighbours?
So there are a couple of practices who provide really good access to care, but I don't know many practices who provide really, really good access to care but who are GP-led. There will be some, 100% there will be some, but not in our area that I know of. They are all allied, so they're the nurse practitioner-led, triage systems, etc., but GPs mainly just supervising, not necessarily seeing as many patients as they would be because they're supervising, etc. So I think that sets us apart. Whether it's good, bad, I'm not here to argue that. I think you can provide good service both ways.
Yeah, well, I think your scores kind of speak for themselves on whether it's good or bad. You came in, you identified the opportunity for growth. You've achieved that. You've managed to maintain and, if anything, improve your engagement levels, your satisfaction levels. You've achieved that. What's next? Certainly in our conversations, you very much come across as someone who's always looking at what's next and how do we keep driving? How do we keep innovating? So what is next in terms of moving the practice forward and what do you have planned?
So we always say to each other every meeting, every 3 to 6 months, let's consolidate. Let's just, take 3 months, not break, but 3 months to consolidate, see where we're going. But we can't stop ourselves, really, I think. So I think our next goals are, a couple of them would be, we've recently started collaborating with local practices. Unfortunately, a practice was going to stop its services and they needed our help. So we provided clinical care for them, clinical help for them, and gave a little bit of advice for them as well. And they've managed to kind of sustain themselves. They didn't need our help, and we're willing to help as well. The other thing is, I think, collaborating not just with individual practices, but with the whole federation. And that's what we're doing at this stage. We did this last winter as well. We put our hand up and said, look, we'll have the whole federation in access. So not only are we going to provide same day access in our practice, and we'll continue to do that, but we want to help the local area, hundreds of thousands of patients. So we're providing extra appointments every day over the last few months and over the whole of winter and spring to help the local community, really. So those are the two biggest things. So not just helping us and our population, but the local services as well, while maintaining the care that we're providing.
Yeah, okay. So that's maybe the plan for the practice. What about the partnership? You clearly still seem very, very much believers in the partnership model when that again is coming into, you know, a lot of question across the country. What's your plan for the partnership? Do you plan to grow the partnership? Do you plan to diversify the partnership in any way?
Yeah. So I think we want to consolidate on the partnership at the moment. I think it seems to be working well. I think we are on the same wavelength. We think very much the same, and it's going in the right direction. So if someone comes along and they think very much like us, they have the same ethos, the same, you know, inbred qualities, then yes, I think we might be open to progressing in that aspect. But at this stage, I think in the partnership aspects, we're happy where we are.
Okay. Going back to your previous mention, actually, about, you know, the extra access you were providing through the winter and helping the Federation, you've touched on how your role as partners can accommodate all of that access and the fact that it's unlimited. And then, like you say, sometimes you kind of just have to suck it up. You know, it's your name above the door. At the end of the day, it is your business. How do your salaried GPs work? Do they work in a similar fashion? Is theirs a more protected setup? What's the distinguishment between salaried and partner at the practice?
Yeah, thank you for raising that question, actually. So I think we've got a different way of doing things. So this is a prime example. So if you ask a GP, what are the pain points of a GP's job every day? And I think the three major ones, they might be other way around, wrong way around, etc. But they're normally on calls because of the uncertainty, admin work, bloods, filing, extra GP workload admin-wise, you know, doing reports, etc. And number three is probably home visits, because it breaks up your day and no one really, I know, enjoys home visits. So what we decided is we take all of three away from the salary role. And we decided we can only have salary doctors seeing patients. So essentially, we have a salary role in some aspects where they just do locum work, but they also have the reassurance as a fixed job. So they have best of both worlds. And because of that, I believe, that's something I think I had an idea of, and we all went along with it. Because of that, we often get applicants before we even put a job out, really. Whereas, you know, some practices find it difficult to recruit. So yeah, so we've made it easy for people to come in and made their job easy. And that helps in staff retention as well, not just clinically, but otherwise. It's not like we don't pay them enough as well. I would say we pay ourselves doctors above the average.
Retention is key, yeah, and I wondered, as you were going through and you were saying about how, you know, how unbelievable the access is compared to what might be considered sort of nationwide norms, is I can understand how as partners you would reconcile yourselves with that, because as I say, it's your business, it's your name above the door. If it's successful, it's yourselves that reap the rewards of that. And I was wondering, how do the salary GPs play into this? So I think that's a really interesting way of working, and having them, as you say, almost like just permanently employed locums, almost, and that they're just there for the clinical side, the running of that business, you know, that, which you could say the admin and the results, that it all contributes to the running of the business, sits with the partners. Really interesting. So your partnership's clearly working. You've got the division of labor spot on, it would seem. The patients are engaged. The stability is there. Partnership, like anything else, though, has a spectrum. You know, you're going to get practices like yours at one end, and you're going to get those at the other end where the model is failing and or indeed already failed. There's American conglomerates, you know, big national super partnerships, all sorts, coming in and taking over those practices. What do you foresee being the future of partnership? Do you see it being more of isolated examples of success like yourself, or do you think the model as a national strategy still has a future?
I would hope that this model doesn't change, and I think it shouldn't, because there's a lot of work that the partners do which we wouldn't get credit for. So for example, if you are a salary doctor, you are doing a fixed role, and yes, you might think of patients every now and then when you're home, out of hours on a weekend, but as a partner, you're doing, in my opinion, some aspects 24/7 work, just like a business owner. And if you started deploying a fixed job description to every single GP with our partners doing what they do out of hours, then I don't see how a general practice would function. I can't see that. So I think that has to be, first of all, credited, and I think partners should be patted on the back, and I don't think that happens enough, especially when new things come about that we're going to take the partnership roles away, we're just going to employ salary doctors. It'd be good to see how that functions. It would just simply function as an urgent care center, which is literally, on the spot diagnosis, on the spot treatment, and go and see your GP on Monday morning. So I don't see that functioning. The challenges we face in general practice as a whole is, I think there's quite a few, isn't it? So I think the biggest one in my eyes is changing demographics of patients. We are only living longer. The average patient population size is only getting bigger. And when
just past 10,000, I saw the average last week.
Yeah, exactly. So the population is getting bigger, population is getting older, so that brings about its own complications. Technology integration, we're going towards new health tech companies, technology is playing a big part, and I was alluding to that on my recent LinkedIn post as well. So we need to integrate technology as well. And then lastly, which is as important as it always has been, is workforce challenges as well. Making sure that the GPs that are working as GPs, to make sure they're happy, they don't leave, and they don't quit medicine, which a lot of, unfortunately, GPs and doctors are doing. And then getting and making sure that enough doctors are becoming doctors. So increasing medical schools, which seems to be happening.
So if those are the challenges that face general practice as a sector or as a profession, what do you think the challenges in the coming years will be that you as an individual GP, not as a partner, not as a business owner, but as a general practitioner, what do you think those challenges will be?
I think for individual GPs, I think it's the aging population. So the increase in demand, the increase in workload, complications of patients, that will definitely increase the demand on every single general practitioner. I see that as the biggest one. And then I think we have to start realizing that a GP's job is not going to be the same as it used to be 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even 20 years ago. We're going to have to start working with allied healthcare teams to work with them. Needs a different type of skill, as a general practitioner, the job is slowly going towards supervision and business running and administrative. And I think that was one of the reasons I got the idea, because that's where we're heading, really. So those are the things I think we need to be mindful of.
Yeah, okay. And so, scenario time. This is something I like to ask quite a lot of the GPs that I work with, both the candidates and the clients. You've shaken the magic eight ball and you turn it upside down and it says your health secretary for the day, or a Monopoly card. You pull the Monopoly card, your health secretary for the day. You can make one instant change, however large or small, that is going to protect or benefit general practice going forward. What change do you make?
Good question. I mean, so I think the obvious answer, obvious answer is you need to increase funding in primary care. If you help prevention of illnesses and diseases, and that's primarily done in primary care, then you're going to save a lot of money, a lot of resources, a lot of waiting times in the secondary care. So, but I think we also need to be mindful of money doesn't solve issues. I think systems in place, leadership solves issues, in my opinion. So I think you have to put money into primary care, but then you have to be able to see if the results are present and how did each practice or each PCN use the money? Was it actually used adequately? So if you, let's say you as a practice get 100,000 or £50,000 to improve your access, you need to have outcomes present, so the, which are auditable before the money was given to you, and how did it actually make a difference? So those parameters need to be in place because the money needs to be used in a way which actually improves improves patient outcomes.
So it's not just a case of we need more. It's yes, there is a need for more, but it has to be used correctly. And I think that that's something I think that is probably underreported actually. Is you know there is constant clamour for more funding, but then on the back end we hear about these pots of money that are available that are not always utilised, not always fully used, and you think, right, well, why can't that money be reallocated or redistributed? So I think you're absolutely right. There's a debate there to be had.
And I think. I think a couple of other things I would say. So there's obviously funding has to be there, okay? But I think you have to also help each practice with the sustainability. You don't want practices failing, right? So, you know, it doesn't help the patient care, it doesn't help the population of the practice. So finding ways where the local government or local PCNs or federations can actually help those practices become sustainable, be it that they get the local practices partners, which the practice might be doing well, to come in and help. That could be one way, give advice, that could be another way. And I think all of that is underlined with promoting collaboration and integration. Not each practice is each practice working on their own and looking after themselves. At the end of the day, we're here to provide patient care. It doesn't have to be your patient care, it has to be just the population care. As a doctor, that's your job. So we should promote collaboration between each practice, open doors, share ideas, and help each other.
You've been listening to the Illuminating Primary Care Podcast. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe, review, and share so others can find the podcast too. We really appreciate your support. If you're a practice looking to recruit permanent clinicians, such as GPs, nurses, or allied health staff, please get in touch at menloparkrecruitment.com or email james@menloparkrecruitment.com. For daily primary care news, please follow Menlo Park Recruitment on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another episode of the Illuminating Primary Care Podcast.